leased my first Lexus here recently in Jacksonville.
That's a beauty.
It's dandy.
It's silver, man. But you and I on an off week going to take a trip down A1A.
Yeah.
Check out all the pretty girls. Am I allowed to say pretty girls? I don't want to offend anybody.
But wear Speedos.
Yeah, that'll offend people.
And go buy some tube socks like the boys used to do in wrestling. Yes. Pack their shit. You know, they said one of the funny stories that Kurt Hennig, who I love working with.
Oh, man.
You know, he just so talented in so many areas.
Yeah.
As the story goes, he would take a pair of tube socks and, you know, roll them up so they're you know, they look like a penis. And then he would take a string and tie it real tight toward the end to create a head.
Uh-huh.
An uncircumcised head of his socks. So the outline of his uncircumcised head would show through his tights, which oftentimes were orange. So the outline was there. He had a lot of fun with that dude.
It was a great river, man.
It was.
It was tremendous.
And a hell of a worker, too. Really, really good worker. Big 6'3", 245, could move. He had the body of an outside linebacker, or a middle linebacker. Big and strong, could run. Very athletic.
The Crocketts brought him in to the interviewing one time, and this is, you know, this had to be like maybe 86, 85, 86. And I was working in the office, the wrestling office, and Sandy Scott said, "We need you to go to the airport and pick up Kurt Hennig." I said, "Okay." I said, and this is how broke Lois and I were. I said, "I only have my mom's old car, which was an old Mercury. She gave me that car because I didn't have a car. And the driver's door was had a big dent in it. You couldn't open the driver's door. So to get in, I had to get in that side." So I said, I don't want to pick him up in my car. And Sandy said, "Well, that's what we need you to. So take your car and pick him up." And I went to the airport, got out of the car, met him, and I said, "I have to slide in first." And I slid in first, and he never let me forget that years later. Yeah, Shimani had this piece of junk. We had to scoot in side by side like we were on a date. Seems like a million years ago, Jim.
That makes a town really feel like it's wanted, doesn't it?
Sure. Exactly. Exactly. I was thinking the same thing. Brugger be Kurt Hennig, which obviously was, you know, I mean,
on top. So
yes.
You're working probably on top.
Right. We're going to bring Siobhan in with that car and bring him, go pick him up. And that's, and that just is a small part of why that the Crockett's never made it.
Well, you know, a guy could argue that through those promoters became prominent, built their business in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s. They had a plantation owner's mentality on them.
Yeah.
And again, that's why I talk about the territories again. That's why some people are so fondly remembered, you know, working for Don Owens in Oregon.
Yes.
Because he was a real nice man. The towns believed in his payoffs.
Right.
So, and his trips were short.
Yeah.
You know, Paul Bosch had a good reputation as a good payoff guy. Sam Lustig as well.
Right.
But, you know, they were the masters of their domain. There was two sides to both those gentlemen as well.
St. Louis was different, though, wasn't it? They were NWA, but they brought in everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Sam was the president of the NWA.
Oh, yeah, I know, forever.
Real nice man, I liked him. Good to center his learning tree. I asked him one time how he managed talent so well. Because I was trying to get that area of work within the business. So how do you manage talent so well? What's the secret? And he said, there's really not any secrets other than each talent is different. You can have a basic philosophy, but be willing to amend it if it gets you the desired result.
How about that?
So in other words, don't become too set in your ways that it always becomes my way or the highway.
Yeah. Sharp guy, man. So you got your place at the beach.
Yep.
All right. That's tremendous.
I'm going to have a little plaque made to hang in my living room that says, my fat looks better brown than white. Arn Anderson. It was funny that I, when Arn, when the Dark Order was sizing up Arn in the ring, he was finally taking his fucking watch off.
Yeah.
Like he's going to the pool hall to get the fight in Rome, Georgia. Let me take my watch off. I'll whip your ass, buddy. Wait a minute, what time is it?
He came by me the other day and chopped me in the fucking chest. I mean, laid it fucking in. What the fuck? He said, that's for all the time you've been cussing me. Jesus Christ, Marty.
He's funny.
Oh, man.
I wonder if he's, how he feels, I haven't asked him, I thought you might have, how he feels about being a podcaster.
Yeah, I've never asked him that. I went to his house, you know, had set up the equipment for him. And I drove up to Charlotte. Conrad had sent me all the equipment. I set it up and got him started. But how he's enjoying it, I've not asked.
Me neither. Hope he does well.
I hope he does well, too. You know, he'll be better. He'll be a better podcaster if he's Marty Lundy than if he's Arn Anderson. You know, I mean, listen, the Arn Anderson, you know, the Four Horsemen series stuff was great stuff.
Yeah.
But the entertaining guy is the guy that we know. I mean, Jesus. One of the most entertaining fuckers ever.
Isn't it funny that when I think of guys like that, Arn being naturally funny, I always think about Brad Armstrong.
Really?
Well, he was just a lot the same way.
Yeah.
He made the boys laugh
almost
every time he was around them.
Right.
And the guys were so cynical anyway, you know.
Yeah.
So, but he made them laugh.
Yeah.
Was he? Were you there when he was a candy man?
Oh, yeah.
Hey, look. He went along with it.
Yeah,
of course he had to make a living.
Yes, and he did a rock demand, too. Brad was willing to do anything.
Very good. Yeah. I think he could hide behind the mask a little bit and made him less inhibited.
And he was, wasn't he like Fantasia with the Freebirds, too?
Yeah, probably. I don't
know. Yeah. Yeah. That's, you know how he died, don't you?
Sleep apnea.
Sleep apnea. Wow.
That sleep apnea is a kiss of death, man.
Yep.
It's nothing to take lightly. No.
And I get my CPAP machine Monday.
Great. After
taking this, so if I make it to the weekend, I'll have one.
I'll tell you how dependent I am. I got the newest CPAP machine they make. And, get all my equipment sent to me because I'm a senior citizen now. And I went out and bought me a second unit that's a traveler.
Oh.
It's about the size of, it might be the size of a medium sized shaving kit.
Really?
And it's built to sit on for a long distance flight.
Yeah.
So we're going to London, like we're talking, we're going to England sometime.
Yeah.
It's built to sit on your console, like your seat of your airplane.
Wow.
So.
Those things make much noise?
No.
They don't?
The noise comes in on the seal. The seal being the mask. If the mask has air leaks, it'll whistle. But after a certain time, to be honest with you, you kind of shut it out.
Well, I'm sure it's not as noisy as snoring.
No.
Yeah. To people around you.
Well, the other thing about it is that the peace of mind you get knowing that you're going to, you know, not stop breathing.
Yeah.
You said you stopped breathing about 50 times in an hour?
50 times in an hour is what I...
Mine was 66. And it was, that's not good.
Yeah, I know, but the doctor said 3 is considered excessive. 30 is considered excessive.
I just... If I have a malfunction on my machine, I'm really hesitant about going to bed. I'll just stick sitting up or something.
Right.
Because I just don't trust it. I don't trust myself.
Right.
And, you know, your heart affects the pounding. When you have sleep apnea in front of them, it stops breathing. You've got to have air. You've got to have oxygen to survive. And I don't know, man. I just don't. I'm leery. I'm scared of it. I'm going to die. I'm going to sleep. I got this stupid ass dream, man. I've had it for years and years and years.
Okay.
Where when my time comes, I'm found dead in a Marriott. I don't know why it has to be a Marriott.
I don't know either.
But I think it's symbolizing a hotel room.
Okay.
That's where we're on the road a lot.
Right.
And that bothers me.
Is it a courtyard or a fairfield?
Oh, I think it was a big one.
A big one.
Yeah.
Well, of course.
With room service. You know those road trips every week? I kind of look forward to them. Kind of look forward to leaving.
Yes.
So, going to a new city, eating new food. Yeah,
it was good, man.
Everybody's had little routines.
Yeah.
Road with this guy and that guy.
Good crowds.
I remember, I think it was you and me, Chris Cruz and Terry Funk.
Yeah.
In Chicago, maybe, or something.
Yeah, I know.
We spoke that week. I don't know if I said you were. Funk was.
Yeah.
Of course, if Funk's going to do it, Christian Cruz is going to do it. Because he was Terry's kind of Chris's role model in some ways. Oh, Chris gets on a tangent every now and then and goes on Facebook. And,
Jesus. Well, you know, he costs the company some money.
Yeah, what was that? I don't know
how much money it costs us. I'd heard 10 grand, but here's some of the stuff. Fine. I mean, I don't get what the motivation was behind that. Pissed off with the business, wanted to be seen as someone who stood for what was right, or just being a jackoff. I don't know what the motivation is for that. I mean, if you ask me, there's so many worthy things you can put your energy into.
Yeah.
Then to do that to a company and a person that you don't know. It's beyond me. I guess I'm a different person than he is. I'd like to see Terry Funk again, though. I really would.
Yeah, me too.
I always had a lot of fun with him.
Yeah, me too. I think about him a lot.
Is he in Vince's Hall of Fame? WWE Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Good.
They went in Houston.
Okay.
The same year the Cowboys went in.
Those things are kind of long and drawn out now, aren't they? Those Hall of Fame shows.
They induct too many people.
Yeah. And then they just let them talk.
For a company that's been known for having structure, some of their productions have no structure. You don't let people talk until they're done.
Yeah, that's right.
You get 7 minutes for your speech or whatever it is. That's what it is. You get 7 minutes.
Right. Yeah.
Well, that's like Hurricane Runners or something. If one is good, let's do 8. The irony, I said this is not on TV, I didn't really know. I don't know how it sounded, but probably not on my side. All these guys on the outside of the ring were congregated in one specific spot.
Yep.
They were there to catch whoever jumped over.
Right.
Friend or foe.
Right.
And so there's a lot of illogical aspects of that statement.
Yeah.
And the other aspect of it is that when was the last time you saw somebody go over the top in a cluster, basically get held up and saved by a group, and then sometimes they actually land on their feet, which would not preclude them from getting right back in the ring with a person that's legal and the guy that's, you just name.
Yeah.
And go for the cover. Right. So in other words, my point is, these things over the top into a cluster of guys rarely equates to a victory.
Yeah. I don't think it's meant, I mean, I don't think it's meant to. It's meant to just shock and awe, wow, you know, get a pop, maybe, you know.
And
just
when they first started doing it, Tony, it did that.
Yeah.
But now, we see so much of it.
Right.
It's not as sensational as it was when those things are new.
Yeah, and to me, it's like the slam dunk in basketball. When Dr. J used to do those crazy dunks of his back in the 70s, they were spectacular. But now everybody knows. The dunks don't mean anything anymore. That's why the slam dunk competition, that doesn't do anything for me anymore at all. But back then, it was something else, man. Yeah, it just, I get it. But I just, Jim, I just try to put all that out and just go with it, you know?
Yeah. Better do it. That's the best way to do it.
Yeah, right. Just,
and I said all the time, buddy, I got no more room in my carry-on for fucking negativity.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's my choice. I got buddies of mine, I go through my phone contacts sometimes, and I said, boy, I call this guy a long time. I talk to him or her or whatever. Well, there's a reason more often than not.
Yes.
You didn't want to talk to him.
Right.
You just lay your balls on the table. What's what? Because of the negativity.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you. Here's how the world works sometimes. So Lil Chan gets killed March 17. Subsequent to that, you know, it's running into people and they're really sorry about your loss. It would have been nice, right?
Yeah.
But I think on it. Say whatever. But and then they got to continue to talk about themselves.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I had an aunt one time.
Oh, I know.
She got ate up with cancer, my God. Yeah. She had a place in her nose. It looked okay, easy. I'm done. How does this correlate with your condolences about my dead wife?
Right. Well, there's twofold there. I think there's a lot of people that just ate up with themselves, right? They want to try it. And then there's some people just don't know what to say.
Yeah.
You know, they just.
Less is more.
Right. You're exactly right. I'm sorry. I'm
sorry for your loss.
Thinking about you.
Yeah, I see. That's enough.
Yeah.
Thank you. Did we used to do wrestling down here in time with Perry?
Yep, we did, sure did.
I remember riding down here with Teddy Long Grove, me and Kevin Sullivan.
Yep.
Teddy could drive 70, 80 miles an hour, mm-hmm. steer the car with his knees,
yeah.
and roll a perfect joint. That's a skill now.
Holla, holla, player.
No. I saw Teddy in an autograph signing in Waynesboro, Virginia. First thing he said to me, he said, hey, man, how you been doing? I said, great. He said, man, you still smoke? I said, what do you mean, joints? He said, yeah, did we used to get high? I said, no.
That was JR the other day.